Sharon Lewin, Director of the Infectious Diseases Unit at the Alfred Hospital in Australia and the local conference co-chair. Thanks for joining us today. While it's still one of the lowest HIV/AIDS incidents here in Australia in the industrialized world, this country has seen a little bit of a boost over the past few years, almost doubling really in the past 7 years from about 500 cases a year to 1,000. What's working and what's not working in your estimation here in Australia?
It's an excellent question, and many of us are struggling to understand the rising numbers of infections. A few things that we do know are that the new infections are predominantly in gay men, usually and youngish gay men, about in the 30 to 40-year-old age group. The increasing infections don't seem to be occurring across the country uniformly. So we're seeing increasing infections in some states, the state that I work in, Victoria, as well as Queensland, but not in New South Wales. So we're sort of trying to examine why that's happening. And some of the thoughts are related to education and prevention campaigns and perhaps acceptance that we're seeing globally and increasing rise of unsafe sexual practices that we're seeing in other industrialised nations as well may be precipitating these new infections. Why it's happening in some states and not in others, we're not sure. New South Wales did have a very large targeted campaign towards gay men regarding prevention several years ago, and some people think that that might be one factor. We're also seeing an increasing number of sexually transmitted infections within the gay community, syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes simplex. It's seen across the country, and that may also be fueling transmission. What are we doing that works? We know one key thing that we do that works is minimising infections in the injecting drug using community. So from a very early stage in the mid-80s in Australia, we've always had access to needle exchange programs, and therefore our prevalence in injecting drug users remains at extremely low levels, has always been low and continues to stay low. So we're doing that well. The other major source of transmission globally, of course, is mother-to-child transmission, and that is very infrequent in a country like Australia. So our big challenges are understanding the epidemic still in gay men and why that's happening. And many of the state governments, as well as the federal government, are now increasing funding towards studies, really, to understand why. And some of the studies that we probably need to do is to understand sexual behaviour and risk-taking behaviour better in that community.
What about the Indigenous population here in Australia? What's the state of HIV there?
Well, we've luckily had very, very low rates of HIV infection in the Indigenous population, and we've worked quite hard at maintaining that. Within the Indigenous population, there's very high rates of sexually transmitted infections, again, predominantly gonorrhea and syphilis. And as you know, that's a real fuel for transmission of HIV. So we've been watching those communities very closely, and to date we haven't had any sign of increasing numbers of HIV, but we do recognise these are a vulnerable group that need to be watched specifically.
Now, you are also the president of the Australasian Society for HIV Medicine. What are your goals in this role?
So the Australasian Society for HIV Medicine is the peak organisation for health professionals that work in HIV. We have over 1,000 members, and our membership includes physicians, allied health, pharmaceutical industry, and basic scientists. And our goals are multiple, but one of the key goals that we have is education and maintaining professional standards amongst practitioners that work in HIV, and we have a very extensive education program for all levels of in the healthcare sector, predominantly focusing on primary care, family physicians, or what we call general practitioners in Australia, as well as high caseload GPs, general practitioners, or general practitioners that see a lot of HIV, those general practitioners tend to be concentrated in the urban centres, particularly in Sydney and in Melbourne. And we have a range of educational resources. We also specifically train doctors such as general practitioners or family physicians in the credentialing for prescribing antiretroviral treatment. So in order to prescribe antiretroviral treatment in a country like Australia, you either require specialist qualifications or some credentialing, and we largely supervise those that credentialing across Australia. More recently, we've been trying to expand those programs to target other health professionals, because we believe that doctors alone may not be sufficient to manage people with HIV, so we've also increased education to nurses and other allied health professionals. More recently, we've had an interest in the actual, in the region. So Australia is a very wealthy country with an excellent healthcare system, a long history of research and excellent care in HIV, and we're sitting within a region that has growing rates of HIV, particularly to the north, Papua New Guinea, throughout Southeast Asia, extending across to India. So we've been very actively trying to pursue or grow our international health programs. And we've most recently, in fact, at this meeting, signed a memorandum of understanding with the Indonesian Medical Association. We've been doing a lot of work together with the Indonesian Medical Association, again largely on education with regard to antiretroviral use, and that was the first MOU that we've signed with a country within the Asia Pacific region. We're also expanding our activities in countries such as Papua New Guinea and in Cambodia, and we're very excited to host a delegation of key leaders from Papua New Guinea to this conference and provide what we've called sort of a leadership program for a number of physicians from Papua New Guinea who have been in Australia with us for the past 5 weeks and now attending this conference.
And with all of the countries that are represented here at this conference, what do you hope that they can take home with them and learn from Australia and then also the work that you're doing in the Asia Pacific region?
I think one of the key reasons why the HIV epidemic has been managed very well in a country like Australia is as a consequence of what we call the partnership, or a partnership between government, practitioners and the affected community. And at all levels, decisions are made with those major partners at the table together. So decisions on licensing antiretroviral agents, decisions on research priorities, decisions on funding or reimbursement for investigations are largely done with that in that framework, and I think that's been very, very useful. It's been done, that approach was laid down in the early 80s, where there was very good communications between the practitioners and the affected community. So we hope that other neighbouring countries adopt those similar practices. We've also been very strong proponents of evidence-based care and credentialing in prescribing antiretrovirals, that they're used appropriately. And I think also nationally there's been a strong priority on research, ranging from basic research through to clinical research, prevention and social research. And very early in the epidemic, a number of national centres were established, which actually provided dedicated funding towards those major areas, basic science, clinical research and social research. That's allowed a framework of, or a whole, to nurture a whole generation of researchers in Australia, which I think has led to a successful outcome.
Now, at the opening session, you made a plug for women's issues as we fight this epidemic. To you, what are some of the most important issues that need to be addressed to look at women, and you specifically said women and global HIV research, but there's also a lot of other issues too. So what are some of the most important issues for you?
Yeah, well, some of the issues that I see are participation of women in clinical trials. Currently, most of our clinical trials for licensing new drugs or even using new strategies for treatment have largely been in the developed world or in countries where there's predominantly occurs in men. And so therefore women have often been underrepresented in clinical trials. So I think we need to be mindful of that and to increase participation of women in clinical trials. I think that this would also be helped by increasing the number of women in HIV research. So although at the IAS we make every effort to get geographical and representation from all of our speakers as well as gender equality, I think if we looked at the numbers, we'd probably still be having there would be many more men presenting at this session than women, and participation of women in leadership positions in research will hopefully benefit the participation of women in the clinical trials.
Well, you're certainly representing women well in that arena, so thank you. Also in the opening session, you said that no aspect of HIV management should be without research, and out of this conference there's been a call to strengthen research and funding for research through the Sydney Declaration. Why was it important to issue this declaration?
Okay, so the Sydney Declaration was issued from the organisers of this conference. It was published in The Lancet, one of the lead medical journals based in the UK. And what it calls for is research in the setting of increasing access to treatment globally. So we've seen a tremendous increase in the number of individuals globally that can now access antiretroviral treatment, and many, many countries that are doing that very, very well. But what we believe is that any implementation of antiretrovirals in setting in developing countries needs evaluation and needs to make we need to make sure that it's working in that setting in the same way as it may have worked in a developed country setting. And so therefore we need to evaluate what we're doing. When we say research, although we are keen to build capacity in research in all areas throughout the world, we really primarily mean operational research, which means evaluating what we're doing, making sure it works, and making sure there aren't specific needs in that country that should change the way we do things. If we don't do that, then we may be investing a lot of money in programs that we don't even know work well. And that was the precipitant.
And last question, in your view, what would make this conference a success?
We think just the representation of so many countries here, the visibility of Australian research has been very important for us, increasing collaborations and networks between researchers, but also particularly between countries that are resource poor and resource rich, that would really make it a success.
Sharon Lewin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.